Hey there, you're with Disembodied Podcast. This is Evie Escher. This week I've got Manoj Agarwal with me. Manoj is a global thought leader, an elite technology consultant, and a business mentor who has been in the AI industry for 15 years and holds 4 patents in AI technology. Manoj has served clients like Microsoft, IBM, Pearson Education, and others, producing $500 million in value for them. His work has impacted over 10 million lives and has been mentioned by people such as President Obama and Bill Gates. Besides technical expertise, Manoj has deep knowledge of human psychology and neuroscience, which gives him a bit of an edge. We'll call it a spiritual side. So I have to give you a little bit of a backstory for Manoj because we didn't really get into it in the interview too much. But he grew up in a small town and he was an easygoing kid, but he had a bit of a troubled home life. He withdrew into himself and became pretty aloof and angry. But at the age of 15, he started working in a factory 12 hours a day and he earned $2 a day as his salary. Later on in 1995, a new computer institute set up shop in his hometown. So tuition was greater than a year's salary, but he managed to scrape together funds for the first class where he found his passion, computers and programming. He met his wife there as well, though the marriage was frowned upon by family. Ultimately, they ran away from home with only a suitcase full of clothes. He and his wife ended up in Canada, where they started a new life. So effectively, Manoj went from $2 a day to the boardrooms of Fortune 500 companies, reinforcing the belief that anything is possible. I tell you this because I love a self-made man. There's nothing like somebody who rises from the bottom to the top. It's pretty inspirational, and it doesn't happen to everybody for sure. So we're going to tap Manoj for his knowledge of AI and also his own spirituality. So sit tight. Here we go. Manoj, welcome to Disembodied Podcast. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much. Excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear about AI and all the stuff that you're involved in. But before we tackle that, maybe talk a little bit about how you got into meditation. And I think you had kind of a crisis early on some years ago that facilitated a spiritual path. So could you talk about that?
Yeah. So, you know, I've always been curious about spirituality, even in school days. But I was not mature enough to understand it or do anything with it. But what happened was in 2010, I had my firstborn child. And before that, you know, I had him when I was like about 35. So until the age of 35, I used to be quite confrontational with everyone, adults in my life, with my parents, with my spouse. And I used to pretty much blame other people for a lot of my problems. And when I had my firstborn child, I was not able to connect with him. And that was the crisis moment in my life, which made me realize that there's got to be something in me which I need to fix, which I need to face. And then that led me into, first of all, seeking help from therapists, from psychologists, and seeing, you know, what was going on. But they offered me some insights, but they were not able to like really shift anything inside me. And that's when, you know, after going to all these people, I found meditation, I found spirituality, I found, you know, being a person of science and technology. Also, I dove into neuroscience, learned how the mind works, human psychology, all of these things to really understand what happens between, you know, in our mind, how this life unfolds and how we react to it and all of that stuff. And so that's the journey I had to take.
So were you raised with religion at all or any type of spirituality?
Yes, of course. You know, I was raised in India, and India is a very, of course, the society is entrenched in religion, in Hinduism particularly. But earlier on, what I realized was, you know, going to all these temples and everything, I got disillusioned by the organized religion, because it sounded like, rather than offering a path for elevation, they were prescribing what do you need to do to escape the hell after life. So it was pretty much fear-based, very commercialized. So I actually remember when I was like 10 years old, I stopped going to the temple, and I got in big, big trouble for doing that from my parents. They were like, you know, what's wrong with you? You know, is this not good behavior? It seems like you're going on a wrong path. But I was adamant that I didn't want to be part of it. So the commercial religion did not offer any sense of spirituality to me. But then after that, now I read the text and interpret the text for myself. And that gives me more spiritual understanding about what these texts are trying to convey. And the unfortunate part is, once you understand life, and once you understand what these texts are trying to say, it's simple stuff. But the commercialization of religion makes it very difficult. It's almost like the legal system, you know, or the accounting system or the financial system, where people say, no, you know, you don't have any knowledge to deal with it. So let us deal with this and tell you what the text means. So that's how religious, modern religion comes across to me, at least.
I always think of India as kind of a tolerant place philosophically, because, you know, really for thousands of years, you know, there's been a lot of coexistence with different spiritual groups. And, you know, I realize that, you know, there's an issue between Islam and Hinduism. But do you feel that there is some stuff in India, some type of religion or group that you would connect with better?
Well, India is, you know, a very complex society, ancient society, as you said. So a lot of religions came out of there, Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism. And interacting with those people, you, of course, find really good, you know, aspects of those religions. So what I have determined is not to get attached to a particular philosophy, but try to take the best of everything and try to follow what really resonates with an individual. Because at the end of the day, the end result for all these religions is a transition into something bigger than yourself, is to do the good in the world, is to help other people and improve your own existence, evolve as a human being. They're all pointing in the same direction, just their message is different, their methods may be different. So you can pick and choose. I mean, that's what I do. I just pick and choose and see what resonates with me.
So you were more into science probably from the beginning. Did you feel atheistic because of that or not?
Yeah, I mean, there have been many streaks of atheism. As I said, like even at 10 year old, like I didn't accept the established religion. And when you don't have anything, of course, you start to think, you know, there may be nothing that exists out there. But then after having spiritual experiences, very deep personal experiences, you feel something that you cannot deny. I mean, you cannot maybe say, okay, you know, what is it? Like, is it God? Is it universe? Is it the field? Is it whatever it is? You can give it any name. But once you feel something inherently, internally, then you cannot deny, oh, okay, you know, there, I felt an energy, something outside of me. And now I have started to interact with it. I've started to understand it. So that's ever evolving discovery, or, you know, how can I say it, like getting familiar with this divine nature of the universe, that I don't think it ever stops. I don't think you can say, okay, now I have reached a certain level of consciousness, so now, you know, I'm done, I know everything. I don't think even the Buddha ever stopped learning. It's an infinite depth of consciousness, and you can keep digging deeper and deeper and deeper.
So can I ask you who you felt you were contacting in the spiritual world? Can you talk about the energies that you encountered?
what I have reached the conclusion, again, this sort of takes into account my scientific background. From what I can understand, consciousness is basically one energy. It's not like you and me have different consciousness. It's just one radio signal, and you are catching a little bit different wavelength of that radio signal. I'm catching a different wavelength. So we are just basically different antennas experiencing the same consciousness. And I believe consciousness itself is just like a donut of universe, like the universe, like sort of, you know, wrapping itself around it and saying, okay, what else can I experience? What else can I make? What else can I create? And just keeps growing out of our own imagination, because we ourselves are part of the universe. So it's like it's self-experiencing, self-creating, and self-co-creating with itself.
So are you more in alignment with thinking that humans are gods in a way, capable of their own manifestation and creation?
Yeah, because if you think about, this paradigm about one consciousness and we are all connected, and we also take into account the discoveries have been made in science like subatomic particles, quantum physics, all of that stuff points to that this universe is basically energy, and all you need to do is really fine tune yourself to get in the right vibration with the energy. Once you are in vibration, once you're aligned, then yeah, I mean, the idea is you need to have very specific clarity on what you want to experience, and then continue to fine tune your own self to get to that level. Because I think a lot of people don't realize how important it is to have a clear vision. Most people don't have a clear vision. They don't know exactly what they want, let alone finding a method to fine tune yourself. So it's like, if I want to use an analogy of a musical instrument, first you need to know what song you want to play. And then once you know what song you want to play, you need to know how to, you know, manipulate the instrument, what strings to pull, you know, what is the tempo you want to adopt. But before all of that, you really need to know what song that you want to play.
So some people think we're in a simulation. Do you go along with that?
Well, I mean, you know, people who say we are in a simulation, I don't think they have really experienced consciousness at a deeper level. Emotions, consciousness, I wish they, like, again, knowing about how technology works, knowing about how we work as human beings, if there is a simulation, I believe that simulation is part of that universe. So if we think universe is above everything, then everything that exists inside it is part of the universe. So even if that simulation exists, it's that universe experiencing itself through a simulation, if that makes sense. But I don't feel like we are in a simulation. It will be absurd kind of thing to say we are in a simulation and now we are creating our own simulations, and in which there will be more simulations. It's like mind-boggling to me at some level.
Yeah, it is kind of. So what do you think is happening when you're meditating? Can you explain what you experience when you meditate? Because you've done it for some years, right?
Yeah. I think, you know, the best way to describe meditation will be that we, human mind is, I believe, like, okay, some people call it, we have three parts to it, but for simplicity, let's take our mind and divide it into two parts, right? One is subconscious mind. One is the logical conscious mind. Most people think that we live our lives consciously with logic, but I there's so much evidence that that's just 5% of our life. 95% of what our life is our subconscious mind. The actions we take, the emotions we feel, you know, the life we experience, it's all subconscious mind. And the subconscious mind has been, you know, obviously just noticing, sitting in the back, taking in all the experiencing, learning the patterns, and then giving us some feedback in a way that we are not able to recognize until we start meditating. Once we start meditating, what happens is the conscious mind becomes a separate entity, subconscious mind becomes a separate entity. It's like, you know, sort of it peels off the sticker, like, you know, the sticky layer of a sticker starts to peel off. And then your conscious mind can start being an observer for the subconscious mind and say, okay, you know, I'm feeling a little bit low today. What could it be? You know, what is going on? And then you start to go within yourself and say, okay, where is this emotion coming from? Why is this happening? What am I inviting in my life? And so that way you can start to transcend that barrier of, you know, that invisible energy that is coming out of your subconscious mind. But now you can watch it, you can observe it. Not only that, but you also develop the power to change it. So you can say, okay, this thought that is originating, I don't think that's a very useful thought. So let me just replace it with another thought. And now you are optimizing your own operating system, your own consciousness to drive you to that next level easily or faster or what have you.
So you're kind of retooling or re-engineering yourself. It kind of sounds like AI in a way. So maybe we should transition to that conversation. You have a positive outlook on AI, right?
Yes. So do you have a question regarding that?
Well, I was going to say that there's so many people I just heard in the news even recently from different sources, you know, that there was that Google executive or whatever that said AI is the most dangerous thing. We should all be really worried. And, you know, I'm hearing this every week now. So are you worried about it? And if not, why?
There are many levels to the truth. So when people are too close to technology, as human nature is, we always look at the sort of the negative side of things. Now, inherently, technology has never been nefarious or malicious. So even if you take the atomic bomb, the original sort of invention was, okay, you know, it releases a lot of energy and energy release can be good. It's the human being who can take the technology and use it for negative purposes. So when people say, you know, AI is dangerous, I believe what they are saying is AI is dangerous in the wrong hands. AI is dangerous in terms of the far-reaching implications it will have. There may be some, you know, socioeconomic impact, like there will be some job displacement. How are we going to handle that as society? Let's say if, you know, we lose 100 million jobs over 1 year, like how are we going to react as society? Are we going to take care of those people? Are we going to help them upskill? Or we are going to just forget about them? So these are some of the unknown things that I believe are concern. Not so much that, oh, AI is going to become so powerful that AI itself is going to eliminate humanity, or it's going to be an extinction level event or anything like that. I don't believe that is going to happen, because most people who say these kind of things, I don't believe they understand what consciousness is, what evolution is all about. They are purely talking in terms of their own insecurity, and also just they look at the world in a very mechanical way. Right, they look at the world in a very transactional way, that if you create something very powerful, the first priority of that power will be to eliminate others. That's how humans think. But if you consider there are like millions and millions of species on this planet, and there's only one species that wages organized war against each other, that's humans. That's it. So that tells you it's not in the nature to like destroy other things or other species. So I'm not worried from that point of view.
But this begs the question, you know, like there are so many people with bad intentions. And even if it's not explicitly bad intentions, it could be just profit-making intentions, which sometimes translate to bad intentions.
Yeah, of course. And again, you know, the way the world is portrayed to us in media, in other ways, they are always reporting what is bad happening in the world. And that creates a perception that the world is bad. If the world was bad, we would have destroyed ourselves like millions of years ago. There have been various instances in human evolution where human population dwindled to a few thousand or even a few hundred. But we survived not because we are very competitive species. We are actually very collaborative species. So yes, there could be a handful of people, let's say there are 1% of population who will misuse this technology for bad purposes or making profit. But then we also need to rely on the counterweight of 99% of the people who can use the same technology to fight that, or you know, do more good in the world that will balance out that negative effect. And that's how the world is surviving today. You know, there are bad peoples, but then there are more good people who are, you know, preventing a lot of bad stuff to happen. Yes, there are big problems in the world. It's not perfect, but you know, it's not as bad as we tend to think it is, right?
Yeah, I guess it's who is in charge, you know, who has the power to really make the rules about things. I think that's kind of the tricky part, because some countries have a very limited number of people making the choices for a whole population.
Yeah. So let me address it this way, right? So far in human evolution, we have always valued IQ, your intellect, your ability to solve problems. And people who are smart, they rise to the top and they become the leaders, leading the countries or what have you. Now, let's say, you know, a machine comes along which has an IQ of 1,000 and it keeps getting more and more intelligent. In that scenario, IQ will not be valued as high. So people who have the high emotional intelligence, who have ability to empathize with others, who have the ability to listen to others, understand others, I think they will have major advantage. So in fact, AI is actually, in my opinion, taking us to a positive side where we will find more humanity in the world rather than less, because the thinking and the strategizing and the competition for resources, that will start to dwindle, that will start to become less important.
Oh, okay. That's a different perspective. I mean, that's kind of encouraging. How are you involved in AI presently? How are you involved with it?
See, the first order of business is, because we have been involved in AI for 15 years, my company and myself, and AI has been around since the 70s. Now, what has happened is, because of platforms like ChatGPT, it's more and more in the news in the last 6 months, but that doesn't mean the technology is new. So as it has happened, you know, a lot of misinformation and fear is spreading amongst the population about AI. So the first order of business for people like me who have really deep knowledge about this topic is to help people get over their fear and really encourage them to understand at a basic level what this technology is and how it can help them improve their lives, their businesses, their professions. And then the next order of business is, once that foundation has been laid, okay, now how do we solve some of the biggest problems? How do we solve climate change? How do we solve, you know, hunger, of you know, drinking water shortages, all of these things, cure for cancer, cure for Alzheimer's, you know, pandemics, all of these things can be immensely impacted by artificial intelligence, but only if people come forward and use their skills and supplement their abilities to solve these problems with artificial intelligence.
So do you directly advise companies with regard to AI? Are you like a consultant telling them how to use it, or?
Yes. So we are consultants and implementers. So what we do is we work with the organizations, understand their priorities, and then we say, okay, this is how and where you can deploy AI. And then if they agree that they want to implement it, then we work with them. We have engineering teams who understand the technology, who understand business processes. So then we start to automate their business using AI and basically just making their business more efficient, more error-free, less stressful. You know, we have done work in healthcare, helping people helping doctors make better diagnoses, you know, helping patients get better care. We have worked in education where we have used AI to create personalized curriculums, help students not drop out of their degree programs and complete their degree programs. So AI can be used in so many different ways, and it has impact in, you know, long lasting impact in pretty much every industry. So the idea is that if people are innovative enough, if they are risk takers, if they want to embrace this technology, the potential is limitless.
So do you currently see in these businesses that you consult with that a lot of jobs are being lost to AI, or not so much?
here is the way that I look at it. If somebody is able to do their job proficiently, if we add AI to the mix, I believe they are able to do their job 10 times faster. Now, what that means is the business who is short-sighted can say, okay, I used to have 10 employees. I'm going to get rid of 9 and I'm only left with 1 employee and my business stays the same. But a progressive business owner will think, oh, okay, so I can keep my 10 employees, but now I'm able to expand my business 10 times with less stress, with less, you know, running around, with less errors and better customer service. Which one will I choose? So that's a decision that people make. Now, that being said, even if people decide, oh, I'm going to let go of 9 people, those 9 people are actually, if they get over their fear, they'll find much, much better opportunities today, even to start their own business, even to, you know, become independent and take control of their life. A quick example could be when the internet came along. Before the internet, there was no such thing as a web developer. There was no such thing as a cybersecurity expert. There was no such thing as a smartphone app development company. All of these opportunities are very, very high paying, creative, fun ways to make money. Technology has enabled that. So if we just, you know, again, get rid of the fear and say, okay, this is another part of evolution, this is another transition, then there's going to be so much more opportunity. I'll give you quick stats. IBM CEO has said that AI is going to add about $10 trillion to the world economy by 2030. So the world economy is about $96 trillion right now. So that means more than 10% will be added to the world economy in the next 7 years. That's how big the opportunity is. And I believe the internet, when it came along, in the first 7 years, it probably added maybe $100 billion to the world economy. The smartphone added maybe a few $100 billion. And now you can imagine the magnitude of opportunity if AI is going to add $10 trillion, you know, so it's, the math is easy.
Yeah, that's amazing, actually. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess I knew that, you know, all those other jobs were created due to technology, but it's like, you don't, somehow you don't think about it because we keep hearing stories like, oh, you know, it's going to be bad for jobs and pretty soon we won't have jobs, none of us. And because it could eliminate lawyers. It could eliminate a lot of, you know, kind of people who have specialized, accountants, I think are fearful.
So let me put it this way, right? Again, humans always have this short-sighted view because we say jobs will be lost. But I think we are not imaginative enough to say what a job is. The definition of work itself may change moving forward, right? I'll give you a quick example here. A therapist, his or her job is to listen to people, and they earn hundreds of dollars per hour just to listen to people, right? So what is to say that that becomes a mainstream job? I mean, even today on freelancer websites like Fiverr, you can actually hire a person just to listen to you, because that is the need of an hour today. People are lonely and all of that stuff. So things like this, where we say, oh, we are going to be out of job, I want to ask people to reimagine what work could be like. It could be more creative. It could be more fun. It could be more fulfilling. Again, you know, I always look for evidence. So evidence for this has happened. You know, there was a 300-year period in Europe, which is called the Renaissance period, when creative people were at the top of society. So painters and musicians and philosophers, they were paid much more than, you know, than people who were actually producing the goods. So, and then another example is during COVID, like the governments all around the world that gave money away to their citizens. That has never, never, ever happened before in human life history, right? So universal basic income could become reality. You know, all of these things are a possibility as things unfold.
What do you think the most pressing need for AI focus is right now going forward? Is it the environment, or what do you think it is?
The key is to recognize that AI is a versatile tool to help you accomplish your goals. So I will not say that AI's priority is to solve these big problems. I believe it's individuals' responsibility to use AI to speed up the process. So if somebody is passionate about solving climate change, now they can solve it much better, faster with AI. If their passion is to find cure for cancer, then they can use AI to do that. I won't say it's the responsibility of AI. I don't think AI is a passive technology. It's like saying it's the responsibility of the car to take me to, you know, from my home to the grocery store. You know, if I don't make the effort, if I don't start the car, if I don't use the steering wheel, the car is just going to stand there. And that's how AI is, right?
Yeah, that's a good perspective, I guess. It has to be human-initiated effort driving it a bit.
Yes, yes.
So what type of spiritual practices do you have going on, maybe related or not related to meditation?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first thing is I meditate every day for 20 minutes a day. I do yoga for 10 minutes a day. I try to start my day with a morning walk in nature along the river. All of these things are sort of, they help me get in touch with myself, start my day in a calm way. And then I attend multiple retreats, meditation retreats every few months, cut off from the world, digital world, just go in a remote area where, you know, there is no signal and like-minded people come together. You know, we exchange ideas, we exchange our problems, our sorrows, our pains, our joys, and, you know, that builds a community and you learn how to deal with life, how to, you know, deal with the problems, how to find the joy. All of these things are really, really important. And yet I'm able to live and function in a capitalist society, you know, produce value for others and work with technology.
So you feel like you've achieved quite a bit of balance then in your own life. You're not working yourself too hard and, you know, feeling like life is drudgery because you have these other outlets.
Yes and no, because I think people who understand life, they also understand that life is just like a river. You know, it's got good days, good weeks, bad weeks. So some weeks are very relaxed. Some weeks are so turbulent that, you know, you don't know what the hell is going on. Like last week, my calendar was packed from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. I was like, what is going on? Like, I cannot deal with this. And this week, it has been a little bit slower. So you take conscious decisions and say, okay, you know, I went through a rough time last week. So now let me learn a lesson and sort of slow things down. And when you slow it down, sometimes you feel bored and it's like, oh, I got nothing to do. So let me speed things up a little bit more. And so it's like a roller coaster of a ride that we all go through, right? Like, but the point is that I do feel empowered in that I have found some levers that I can pull and I can control my life. I feel like I'm in control of my life rather than just letting life take me anywhere.
And that would be more through your own meditation practice and kind of reprogramming yourself on a regular basis.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. That's so cool. Well, I'm so glad to have had you on and to talk about AI because, you know, I know something about it. I do definitely watch a lot of news reports on it and stuff, but I do feel like lately they've been more scary rather than encouraging or uplifting. Mm-hmm. So I thank you for that, you know, twist in the perspective. It's probably a much needed thing. And it is very difficult for societies to transition, I think, to new thinking and accepting new technologies because we've been pretty overwhelmed with cell phones in the past, you know, what is it, 25 years or whatever. Everything has changed so rapidly. And I think it's hard for people to have something to hang on to, like a life raft, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it is not new at all. This fear and concern is not new. It has started since, you know, we stepped out and discovered fire, or we discovered invented the wheel, or any other, you know, inventions that humans have invented. They've always caused fear and concern. But once people get used to it, then they realize, you know, how powerful and how beneficial technology is.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I feel like the power of AI, I mean, just even having the power of your phone in your hand whenever you want to look something up is revolutionary. Yeah, I mean, exactly. I remember a long time ago, you know, before cell phones were everywhere, you really had to like go somewhere and find a book and look stuff up or look up a periodical or an essay or something to kind of verify or find out things. And, you know, just having a phone is an amazing experience if it's used right. You know, you don't want to just always compare your life to others and feel bad about your life with it. But if you can actually use it for the information source it is and maybe do something with that information that's useful, exactly. You're limitless, you know, in what you can do.
Exactly. Absolutely.
All right, Manoush, thank you so much for coming on. And we'll put a link to your website in the show notes for this episode if people want to connect with you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Blessed listener, please leave your questions and comments for this episode or any other episode at disembodiedpodcast.com. Thanks so much.